Hello, you're listening to Career Conversations, the latest series that's part of the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters Live. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist, and together we'll meet experts in cooking, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is a truly remarkable person. It's Max Tobias, who is co-founder of The Dusty Knuckle, a social enterprise bakery in North and East London. It's fair to say he has slogged his guts out, along with best friends Daisy and Rebecca, to create a community bakery that helps young people from difficult backgrounds get back their confidence and learn new skills. And let's not forget the delicious bread they churn out every day as well. These guys are the masters. Max's first cookbook is out now, but he makes no bones about how hard it's been to get here. I'll be back at the end with some key info about getting into baking and startups and finding a career that really makes a difference. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast. A lot of our student and graduate listeners say that they really want to open a small food business. They talk about things like food trucks. They want to turn it into a franchise. They think it's going to make them millions. Is that the case?
Well, I haven't made any millions yet, and neither of my two business partners, at least not that we're aware of. On a serious note, we have a great time doing it. I think bakery particularly is really demanding. It's a 7-day week, day and night hustle. It is relentless. The starters need feeding, the loaves need baking, the bags need packing, the cyclists go out, the drivers go out, the customers need their daily bread, and it is daily. So it's not for the faint-hearted, but it's a great industry to be involved in, and it's really creative, and we love the fact that it's something that gives people joyful moments throughout the day.
Where's the name Dusty Knuckle come from? How'd you come up with it, or who came up with it?
Dusty Knuckle, we wanted something that would stand for what we kind of believed in, and it was, you know, grit, hard work. We wanted to point to the hand because we make a very small batch, handmade product. We wanted to appeal to a wide London audience. We knew that we weren't going to be a kind of frilly wheat sheaf country cottage type bakery. We wanted to be like bricks and steel. And Dusty Knuckle seemed to tickle the boxes.
I love the name The Dusty Knuckle. It's kind of tells you what bakers do. They've got dusty hands, but it's also got this hard edge. Sounds a bit like a kind of Backstreet Fight Club. Hmm. I love it. I mean, I'm a chef, so I know what chefing hours are like. Baking is a whole nother level. You're doing it overnight. It's really antisocial. Mm-hmm. Why would anyone want to be a baker?
Look, it's a magical thing, right? Like, I do think it genuinely is close to being like magic, alchemy. It's the transformation of something in your hands that is ticking all the boxes for all your senses. You're in this pursuit of the perfect shift and the perfect set of products. Can I bang this out with 100% perfection and hit rate? And you get to see the fruit of your labor every single day. It's a very immediate gratification that you get. And pulling good bread out of the oven, like, there's very few things that beat that as a sensory experience.
Oh, the smell alone.
Yeah, I miss it. I don't bake anymore. I'm sort of reinvigorating the passions speaking about it.
You started baking really young as a kid. Mm. Who taught you how to bake in the first place?
Self-taught. I mean, I baked with my mum. She was a pretty avid cook, but really it was just trial and error and books. Like, when I was a teenager, there weren't anything near as many books available as there are now. So it did feel like this kind of quirky, kind of weird pursuit, this obsessive weird pursuit that I had. And like, oftentimes my friends would be going out on a Friday or whatever, and I wouldn't be able to come out because I'd have to stay at home to get the bread out of the fridge at the perfect time and be there for the moment that it went into the oven, or go home early from a night out because I didn't want the dough to overprove. And, you know, mad things, like, my friends would sort of cuss me for it, but it was just something that I was prepared to sacrifice a lot for, because once you've started and you've tasted really, really good bread, it takes you over. You want to be able to make it. You want to be able to churn it out and get that moment when it comes out and you're like, yep, bang.
What is your background? Where did you grow up and go to school?
I grew up sort of on the border of Hackney and Islington, and then I went to college in Tufnell Park in North London.
Was that to study anything to do with cooking yet?
No. I didn't have any professional cooking background at all. That all came from my business partner, Becca. So she was the chef. She was the one who'd done the kind of hard yards in the kitchen. And my other business partner, Daisy, had met Becca at Morrow, where they both worked. Daisy was the kind of front of house expert. So initially when Daisy came in, we thought that she would largely be involved in helping us figure out kind of front of house related stuff. But she got herself into the bakery, and quite quickly we all realized that that was really where she was going to shine.
How did you all first meet and come together and make this business happen?
So Becca was a friend of mine since we were in like year 7, 8. I guess food was quite a big part of our friendship. Like, we'd cook together, and I think it's probably fair to say we also both had quite a lot of hang-ups about what we were going to do when we were older. And she ended up going into chefing. I ended up working with young people. And so Becca and I were sort of starting to talk about this idea to have this bakery. And my motivation for it was, I guess, sort of twofold. Like, on the one hand, I'd been working with young people for about 10 years by this point, and I was starting to feel a little bit fatigued because I was working with quite challenging young people and those involved in kind of violence and gang related kind of lifestyles and cycles of offending, and never really feeling like I was getting anywhere. I was sort of winning battles but not wars, as it were, and not really addressing any of the kind of root causes of the lifestyle choices that they were making. And I felt like there was potentially a huge amount to be gained by starting a business, a kind of production manufacturing business, where the labor demand was really high. And so that there would always be a really high need for labor input that potentially could come from these very same young people that I was finding so difficult to make progress with. And on the other hand, the motivation was that I just wanted to do something kind of new and different. And on a selfish level, I wanted to work in a more kind of entrepreneurial way and have the opportunity to cooperate with young people from that walk of life in a more reciprocal type of engagement. I wanted to kind of be able to say, look, we need what you have got to put in, and together we are going to cooperate in pursuit of a bigger goal. And I got talking to Bex about the idea. By this point, I was kind of making bread really often, and people were asking me to bake for their weddings and stuff like that. So I was kept finding myself in these mad situations where I'd have to make sort of 20 or 30 loaves of bread in my oven at home, and I'd be up all night putting 2 loaves at a time in the oven. And I was starting to think, well, maybe I could just start a bakery and we could just employ these young people, and then I could have an alternative lifestyle suggestion for them. And it felt tangible and it felt practical. And Becca reminded me that I had zero experience in any kind of commercial food operation and said, look, I'll be up for it. Like, why don't we give it a go?
She said she was going to come in and be the kind of business side.
We didn't really have enough presence of mind to think about who was going to do what particularly. We just had no more of a plan really than just, let's start trying to sell bread and we'll grow a business and employ young people. And it was very early on that we completely by chance bumped into Daisy outside a pub. One of those sort of, what are you up to at the moment kind of conversations. And we were like, well, yeah, we're thinking about trying to get this bakery going. Like, oh, like, you should get involved if you're not doing anything. And it just literally went from there. It developed kind of on its own trajectory. So we approached the restaurant and we basically said to them, look, you've got this massive pizza oven. On a Saturday morning, it will still be hot from your Friday night service. If you let us use the oven from 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. on a Saturday, we'll leave you 10 loaves of bread. We'll clean down your kitchen. We're not going to put the gas on. We're not going to cost you anything. We just need a key. And amazingly, they said, yeah. And so we started to do that every Saturday. We'd make the dough in my flat on a Friday afternoon. We'd scale it up into loaves. We'd run around the corner with these crates of proving dough, persuaded the cafe around the corner to let us use the fridge in their back garden to put the dough in overnight. So we'd leave the dough in there. I'd go to my dad's house, borrow his car, bring the car back to mine, get up at 3:30, drive down to the cafe, stick the loaves in the back of the car, drive to the pizza restaurant and do 3 rounds in this massive pizza oven. And that would get us up to about 45, 50 loaves. We'd leave 10 at the restaurant and then sell the rest to the 2 cafes in the area. And that was how our wholesale business started.
I love this story. sometimes I talked to business founders and there was a lot of planning involved, a lot of brainstorming. Other times it's people like you who just want to do something and they just start doing it.
Yeah.
There can be a lot of procrastinating sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think as an approach that has its benefits and it has its pitfalls. Like, we've very much had to figure it out as we've gone along. But at the same time, I think if someone had sat us down and said, right, if you want to do this properly, here's all the stuff you're going to have to figure out. Here's all the questions you're going to need to know how to answer. We probably just would have had a panic attack and gone home and not bothered.
Your business helps young people who want to have a go at it, but it's not just a hobby. They have to come and really give it their all. How do young people find you and what kind of young people are coming to you to ask to work with you?
When we kind of started, we didn't really have a hugely kind of refined like list of criteria that would kind of describe our perfect candidate. We really wanted young people who maybe didn't feel like legitimate work was for them, or who felt that making money illegally was more appealing for whatever reason. So over the years, we've really worked with quite a wide variety of what we call trainees. On one hand, we might have an 18-year-old who's been referred by the youth offending team, hasn't spent any time in custody, but is engaged in lifestyle habits that might very well put in there. And on the other hand, we've had a lot of prison leavers who are generally a bit older, kind of early 20s typically, who may have done their first custodial sentence and been very recently released and be kind of determined to stay outside of prison. Most of them won't necessarily have a long-term ambition to stay in hospitality, but really Dusty Knuckle is intended to provide them the opportunity to feel what it's like to just be in a kind of quote-unquote normal job where you get up, go to work, nobody is out to get you. What we hope is that once they have tasted what it's like to be in a healthy work routine, they will realise that it's a much healthier and mentally more enjoyable way to live your life.
How does it feel when you see someone from a difficult background coming to you, changing and transforming and thriving?
It's great, you know. I mean, there haven't been as many of them as I would have liked, but for the ones who have made really tangible progress, you know, I feel really proud of them. I try to remind myself that it's their achievement and not my achievement. And I'm generally a little bit uncomfortable with kind of over-identifying with a sense of responsibility for any progress that they make, because I don't feel like it's my place to take ownership for that. I struggle with feelings of having failed to deliver the kind of size of impact that we have set out to. And it's one of the things that drives me, but I guess it also at times makes it difficult to stop and take stock and say, actually, this is really amazing what we're doing. And I feel really proud of all of us. You know what I mean? But I try to just take those moments where I can. Like, it's not just the trainees though as well, it's the team. Like, we've got team members that haven't come through our training programs, but they come from all sorts of different avenues. Some of them having to withstand really, really difficult personal challenges in their personal lives. And as an employer of, we've got almost 80 people now, and having the privilege to kind of witness their personal stories of hardship and fortitude, you know what I mean? And so it's not just the trainees, it's everyone. When we've got a busy cafe and the staff are all on point and working and it's slick and the music's playing, those are the times when I feel really proud and I'm like, yeah, this is vibey, this is great, and we've created this. And when the staff couple up, when romance blossoms as well, I'm always a little bit proud.
Oh, I love to hear that, Max. Always we're told, oh, no romance in the office, but maybe in the catering world, it's just the way it goes.
There's been a few, man.
Now, you mentioned cookbooks. You guys have got your own cookbook out, the Dusty Knuckle Cookbook. Mm. Is that your first one?
Yeah.
So that's exciting times. How did you go about writing a cookbook?
It was hard work, man. And I didn't even have the really, really hard bit. The problem is, like, we're a bakery and we're a cafe, right? So it kind of needed almost to have a bakery bit and a cafe bit. It was quite hard to get the structure of it the way we wanted. It had to do a lot of different things. We also wanted to tell the story of the Dusty Knuckle and how we started and what our ambitions are and why we think we're a bit different. But fitting all of that in was pretty tricky. essentially Daisy wrote all of the bread and the pastry recipes, and Becca wrote all of the kind of lunch and kitchen based cooking, sandwiches and stuff. I wrote the kind of intro and helped to structure the overview and hopefully tie it all together and make the voice consistent. And we were guided through the process by Quadrille, our publishers, who I'm sure found us quite stressful to work with at times, because we were writing it alongside opening the second site and expanding our production space in Dalston. So it was a pretty mad year last year. But yeah, it's a lovely thing to have got to that point and to have it behind us. We can't wait to see what people think about it.
I've been lucky enough to have a look. It's a beautiful book, and we'll put a link at the end of this podcast so people can know where they can find it. Nice. So my last question for you, Max, is what's next for the Dusty Knuckle?
We are trying to figure that out for ourselves. So it's hard to answer that at the moment. What's next for Dusty Knuckle? We are going to spend a few months concentrating on our operational fitness and making the Dusty Knuckle as great a place to work as it possibly can be, and figuring out the best mix of referral partners for our training program, possibly looking at a different kind of funding model for it, because the pandemic showed us really that relying on kind of traded revenue alone is maybe a bit overambitious. So we're looking at the moment of some different kind of legal structures to operate it, and possibly expansion later down the line. But I don't think we're gonna do anything too wild and too quickly. We were all a little bit wounded last year by the kind of book and the opening the new site and doubling the size of the production unit at Dalston. It was a lot, man. It took its toll. And so I don't think we're in a particular hurry to like enter another race. Just want to try and get it ticking as nice as it can be, get the team well gelled, work on our systems, training. So if you're a prospective member of staff listening to this and you want to come and represent with us, then get in touch. We want to hear from you. Yeah, it's a really fun place to work, I hope. I think you can ask the staff for yourself next time you come in.
It's me again. That was Max, someone I felt I could have done a 2-hour podcast special with. He has worked so hard to create a business that genuinely aims to improve society. Isn't it refreshing to ask a founder, what's next for your company, and have them admit they don't know yet and they just want to be happy with what they have? Max described baking as like magic. And while he spends less time in the kitchen these days, I can tell you his face lit up when he talked about those overnight shifts baking perfect loaves. Now, let's be serious. Baking is hard work, but it is definitely the best smelling job in the world. An apprentice baker might start on 16 grand a year and work very long hours. But as you pick up skills, you'll find your salary increasing up to 40k or more for a master baker. It's overnight or early shifts, so also bear in mind your social life will probably die, but you're building family and skills for life. And I love that anyone can do it, no matter where you started or came from, even if you're not academic. As Max said, if you want to come and work with him, go for it. For the Dalston branch, it's poppy@thedustyknuckle.com. And for Haringey, it's harry@thedustyknuckle.com. And if you Google the Dusty Knuckle cookbook now, you can get your hands on the true story behind the brand and learn how to make the greatest sandwiches in the world. Thanks again to Max for speaking with me. I can't wait to see what's next for the Dusty Knuckle. And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.